and welcome back to the 20-Minute Hit. Back again after a week away, bringing you the fast-paced, all-talking sports debate. And arguably the best that money can buy. Digital money, of course, we go out free on iTunes and Audio Boom. I'm Ollie Wilson, sports broadcaster and reporter for BT Sport, TalkSport and various outlets around the world. I'm afraid to say that Paul isn't joining me today. He's stuck in Australia, living it up on business, apparently. So we've got a fast-paced show with two new guests to the show. I'm delighted to say joining us here to talk a little bit of US sporting action is a very good friend of mine, US sports analyst, Mr. Stephen Edwards. You can find all of his podcasts via his Twitter link, at Sports Edwards. Stephen, how you doing, mate? Pleasure to speak to you again.
Hey, always good to speak to you, Ollie. And yeah, it's a great time of the year. Lots of sports going on, but I'd never say anything bad about going to Australia because that's a great part of the world.
He's living the high life as always, is Mr. McDonald. While I'm here trudging through all the sports news from the last 7 days and the big news kicking off in the NBA this week, the Golden State Warriors. They are one of the greatest sides of all time. Fact, 16 games unbeaten to start a season, the first team in the NBA to do so in its long history. Stephen, let's kick off with this then. And the Golden State Warriors, are they revolutionising the sport, mate?
I think they are. I mean, although they're doing a bit of a throwback as well, because I kind of put them back to the 80s Lakers. They're playing a brand of basketball that everyone's excited about seeing. Again, all this long-range shooting and just hitting everything. I mean, Steph Curry looks like he could just close his eyes and just shoot at will, and it's becoming very, very difficult to take him out of the game.
He has become outrageous from beyond the arc. I mean, we're talking about somebody who's racking up the same percentage of threes as others go matching in twos. You compare it to like the 76ers, and it's the leaps ahead of anybody in the NBA shooting from the arc, and Steph Curry is that leader. But it's not just about his long range game, is it?
No, it's not. It's about his all-round game. And he's taken it to another level. I mean, we're sitting here now, I think, discussing the fact that Steph Curry now has to be the best player in the NBA. I mean, he's...
Over LeBron?
I think you have to say over LeBron now.
King James has been removed from his throne, yeah.
You have to say that now. Steph Curry is the best player in the NBA. And we thought about coming into season as though that maybe the Cavaliers weren't the favourites for the title. Maybe the Warriors were the team to beat. They were the ones that are going to go out and try and defend that title. We know how difficult that is, but at the moment they're making light work of everything. And they're just carving up opponents left, right and centre. Plus 15.6 point differential, which is just ridiculous.
Well, I think that's the thing, is when you're shooting from beyond the arc so much, you know, most teams, you know, your mid-range jumpers, picking up two, maybe playing the ball inside. The Warriors are getting it done from beyond the arc so consistently that it doesn't matter how well you shoot the two ball. You're always going to be losing a point every exchange of possession.
And the thing is as well, it kind of lulls other teams into this. We're going to have to shoot as many threes as what they're shooting. And because they don't shoot them as well, they actually end up making opposition teams shoot themselves out of games. I think you can't understate the Warriors' defense, which is very, very good. But I think also as well is that teams are actually getting defeated, one, before they hit the court, and then on the court, because they get drawn into a Warriors-type game. And I think you've got to try and take them out of that and make them play maybe like a grind-down kind of game and maybe try and take them out of their comfort zone. But we said earlier on, the Grizzlies played them earlier in the season. And what did they do? They blew the Grizzlies out by 50 points.
I was going to say, I mean, Memphis had no chance in that one, and they're the side that you'd have thought would be the most physically capable to kind of box Golden State out of their flow, if you will. I think that's the other trouble, is that if you've got guys shooting beyond the arc like they are doing, you can either then double team someone like Steph Curry, but he's still got the distribution to get out someone like Klay Thompson. They've got Iguodala, who can play well inside as well. There are weapons all over the court that it's not just about their long range shooting, although that is their main threat. They can still switch their style as well. Are they the best team in the NBA, and how do they rank in NBA history quickly, Steve?
I think they are. They're the best team in the NBA right now. And in terms of where they rank in NBA history, we talked about last season's team being one of the top five, top 10 teams of all time. But this is definitely one of the top five teams of all time. I think they're a step down from the Celtics of 85-86, the Bulls of 95-96. But the 2015-16 Warriors are definitely in the top three.
You won't be saying that when they go to Christmas Day with 28 games unbeaten or whatever it will be. And then they blow out the Cavaliers as well. And everyone goes, oh, man. This is for real. We'll leave the NBA for the moment and dive into a little bit of NFL. Of course, we had the Thanksgiving Day games this week. I'm a big fan of turkey and football. But I want to talk about a young quarterback who we've spoken about a lot in the last 18 months or so. Johnny Manziel, Cleveland Browns quarterback, relegated to third string on the depth chart because out partying again after spending the offseason in rehab. Stephen, this guy just can't seem to grow up, it seems.
No, he can't. I mean, if we go back to his college career, isn't it? I had an issue back then. I thought you know, the bright lights, big cities of the NFL, wherever he was going to play, you could just see maybe that he wouldn't be able to stay out of trouble. And we've seen it already. He's a guy that just can't stay on the right side of what he should be doing, according to certain people that are in charge of this team and around the NFL. And I think we use the term now Cleveland Browns quarterback and Johnny Manziel in a very, very loosey sense of the word, because I don't know when we're going to see Johnny Manziel out on a football field again. He's had an opportunity. He was named the starting quarterback for the rest of the season, and now again he's absolutely blown that opportunity.
But has he shown enough to get a second chance elsewhere? I mean, we know the quality coming out of college that Manziel had, breaking records left, right, and centre in his 2 years at A&M. But going into the NFL, it's a completely different ball game. Has he shown enough to be given a second chance? I don't think he has personally. The decision making on the field hasn't been right for me still. He's still trying to play like a college quarterback in the NFL game. That doesn't work unless the system suits it.
Yeah, I mean, I dare to bring up this guy's name. I mean, Tim Tebow is another prime example, a guy that was really, really good in college, but then, you know, had an opportunity in the NFL, and then that was it. It was his one-shot opportunity, and that was it. Obviously, Johnny Manziel's got other issues on top of that, and I just don't think he has enough in his arsenal to play at the NFL level. I didn't view him as a starting quarterback coming into this league. Cleveland was one of those opportunities where he had a chance to be able to be there, and then you never know what might have happened had he been out of trouble and progressed his game. But if I was another team around the NFL, I would not be touching Johnny Manziel, and I think he's maybe lost his opportunity now.
Mobile quarterbacks losing their opportunity around the NFL. Kaepernick, of course, losing the starting spot in San Francisco. And you also look at RG3, who's playing free safety on the practice squad at third string for the Washington Redskins. Which of these three quarterbacks do you think has got any sort of career left in the NFL? Most people seem to be writing Kaepernick off, but I'm telling you, Kaepernick, you put him in Chip Kelly's offense, could run that offense really well still. But RG3 and Johnny Manziel, these are three players that have been given star quality at a young age and haven't really produced, aside from Kaepernick taking the Niners to the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. I mean, Kaepernick has gone furthest of any of these guys. I mean, he had like a Cinderella first season in the NFL and took over the 49ers offense. And I think, unfortunately, he's been a bit of a victim of the 49ers going really downhill, and he's been dragged down with it. It's quite interesting to see how all of a sudden that franchise has gone all the way up and then gone all the way down very, very quickly.
Yeah, some odd decisions off the field there.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for him, I think. And I think a change of scenery would definitely do him good. RG3 obviously is a different kettle of fish because he's had the injuries in the past. And it's very difficult now to try and get him moved on to see where he can perhaps try and help another NFL team. But yeah, I mean, Manziel's done. So I wouldn't even consider Manziel. Kaepernick's got the best opportunity.
No more Johnny football left in the NFL. Stephen, we hope that that Johnny obviously deals with his demons off the pitch and hope him a successful career in some way, shape or form, whatever he does. And we hope we catch you soon as well. We're going to have to leave you though for the moment, Stephen. Appreciate it for giving us your time today. Thank you, mate.
Hey, always a pleasure.
Cheers, Stephen. Stephen Edwards joining us here, but we're going to dive into a little bit of football now as well. Back to basics, plenty of storylines coming out of the Champions League. I'm delighted to say that a man who is joining me to talk a little bit of Jamie Vardy and a little bit of Barcelona is Mr. Chris Vokes from Goal.com. Chris, pleasure to have you back on the show again, mate. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm very well indeed. Very well indeed. Pleasure to see you down at Watford the other day. And is it going to be a pleasure to watch Jamie Vardy against Manchester United this weekend? Because you're going to be down at the King Power.
Yeah, the good thing about Leicester at the moment is that they're really spicing not only the Premier League up, but each game up. The amount of goals they're scoring and conceding means that they're the team to watch at the moment, really. And that leads us on well to Manchester United, who are very much not at the moment. So it should be a spicy one.
Is English football just hoping that Jamie Vardy hits this 11th consecutive game of scoring in the Premier League? Is that good for English football as well as in general kind of the Premier League and being able to say, look, the boy's done good here and Leicester are the side they're going to shake up the top four?
Oh, there's no doubt that Vardy is the kind of the off-the-wall story, if you like. It's so kind of taken as read now that players have to come through from the age of 12 or 13, and if they're shunned at 16 or 17... then they're just not going to make the grade. Well, Jamie Vardy is the proof that that's not the case. Similar to, say, Ian Wright in the past as well. He was a late starter and had to work his way through a very different route. Chris Waddle, another one off the top of my head. There's been quite a few over the years, but they seem to have died away. The fact that Vardy's come up the way he has and the success he's having now is just fantastic. And it gives a lot of people in the football system a lot of hope. And if he carries on scoring, then it can only increase the profile, if you like, of players such as Vardy.
Do you buy into Jamie? Do you think he is the real deal? Is this something that's going to be sustained, if you will, maybe not every single game scoring in the Premier League season, but keeping the scoring record up?
I don't think so. I think somebody like Harry Kane maybe is more likely to make a habit of scoring lots of goals per season over a period of time. I think this is a career high that Vardy will do very well to come anywhere near matching. But yeah, while it's going on, and it can only get better as a result of this, I think it's a fantastic run, and you can't knock what he's contributed to Leicester's run so far.
I think Harry Kane is probably the warning, if you will, for Vardy, because everybody said after last season that Kane's going to be the England striker, and it, last season seems, considering his slow start to this campaign, slightly more of a flash in the pan, and I think you could say the same about Vardy. He's the kind of striker, though, that Manchester United could use at the King Power this weekend, because it's been pretty drab booze against PSV in midweek as well.
Yeah, they need somebody who has got that bit of a cutting edge. They need somebody who's not afraid to do things a little bit differently. They're very much working within a system, and that's great. It's defensively and in the kind of defensive midfield roles. I think that's really made United a very well-structured side, but you need more than just structure in the forward line, because as Philip Cocu pointed out at the in midweek, as soon as he saw that Marouane Fellaini might come on, he got his substitute defender prepared. He knew how he was going to face that. He very much knows how to work to United's structure and how to stop them creating anything as a result of that. United need that little bit of something different in attack, and somebody like Vardy could certainly take that box.
Do United have enough quality in this side, really, to achieve great heights and in the Premier League and in the Champions League as well this season? Because I look at this squad and it just doesn't seem to still have that standout star, with Rooney being disappointing. Mata isn't at his best. We know he's a consistently quality player, though. But aside from Mata, there are few consistently quality players. Even Smalling's being called one of the best players in the Premier League defensively. But this is the first time we've seen him reaching that potential as well.
Yeah, I think particularly Mata is a big question, because as a number 10, he's a fantastic player, but he's just not been given that opportunity this season. I think that is almost, it underlines the problem, if you like, because somebody like Mata can be the difference, but if he's not being given his legs in where he needs to be playing, then there's no point having a lot of quality, because you're just going to drown it out.
Yeah, there's plenty of questions for me about this Manchester United squad. There aren't too many questions, though, about Barcelona's squad. They were superb in the Champions League midweek against Roma, putting six past them, put four past Real Madrid as well in El Clasico on the weekend before that. Chris, this Barca side, are we seeing Barca back to their true best once again? It's a word, best, that gets thrown around Barca quite a lot.
Yeah, it's testing as a journalist and as a punter sometimes to come up with the right words for Barcelona, because they can be just so good at times, and Wednesday was an example of that. Just fantastic, absolutely fantastic. Or Tuesday, I should say. They were magnificent, and when they're at their very best, there's just no stopping them. And Roma are a good side. They're a decent side, and they could well progress from the group. And they look in pretty good shape in a lot of their games this season. They should be challenging for Serie A. And yet, they just couldn't live with them. And even if you look at, say, Neymar, his contribution in that, you know, people look at the score sheet sometimes and draw a lot of conclusions. Neymar, fantastic. Again, like, despite not scoring. And, you know, the whole setup at Barcelona, it's just geared to fantastic football. And
well, I've no doubt Paul is listening in Australia and just ticking the boxes on his Ballon d'Or voting for Neymar once again, as he continues to push for Neymar to be one of the top three in the world alongside Messi and Ronaldo. But how important was it for Barca to get over the injury that Messi had? Kept him out for a few weeks, of course, in the build-up to these games. Yet they got over that hump fine when people thought perhaps they might be tested now without Messi. They're a side that are showing more and more often that they don't need Messi to play at the top of their game, it seems. And then when he comes back in, he just slots straight back into that front three that works with such chemistry with Neymar and Suarez.
Well, that's true. If you just kind of sat down to watch the game the other night, and you looked at the La Liga table, you looked at the Champions League groups table, and you looked at the first team, you wouldn't know Messi had been anywhere. It's just phenomenal the way that people talk about a one-man team when Messi's at his very best and dictating things. There's no problem with that. The fact that they've got someone who can dictate the game as he does, that's fantastic. And the fact that they can play without him as well and be equally as effective, that's that just shows how good Barcelona are.
And I think as well, you look at in this Barca side that everybody will always point to that front three of Neymar, Suarez, Messi. And that's fine because they're the guys that hog the headlines, they get the goals and they create 90% of the chances as well. For me, though, for instance, you look at in midweek, Vermaelen and Piqué as a defensive pairing. Of course, Vermaelen's had his injury problems since moving to Barca. You look at the way Rakitic in the last 18 months has come into this side as well. They're starting to patch those holes that perhaps people used to find the odd criticism of Barca with, the defensive midfield positions, the centre-back positions as well. They're starting to patch that up and become a far more complete side, I think, than we've seen them in the past at the moment.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Rakitic because a lot of people said, how are they going to cope once Xavi goes? And they brought in Rakitic. People used to question a little bit what they do beyond kind of David Villa, and they've replaced him very well and obviously got better. Obviously, the big question mark eventually will be how they replace Iniesta, how they replace Messi. But, you know, going by current form, the way that they're able to replace players and even to an extent improve on them, there's no guarantee that they won't get even better in time.
That's a worrying thought, I think, for everybody in the Champions League. I'll ask you, we're running over slightly on this topic, but I'll ask you very quickly one word, Bayern or Barca for the Champions League, because it seems to be only those two at the moment.
Barca.
Fair play. I don't think I could disagree with you there, although I'd love to see Lewandowski do it. Now, we need to talk a bit about the Davis Cup as well in the final few minutes here as it all kicks off on Friday, this Friday. Belgium won rubber up against Great Britain as we speak today on Friday. A chance finally for GB to win the Davis Cup for the first time since, 1938, I think we're looking at here. Goffin beating Kyle Edmund, but Andy Murray's up and the Murray brothers as well in the doubles on Saturday. Chris, this is a great sporting moment for Great Britain, not just for tennis, but for British sport in general, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think a lot of people overlook the Davis Cup because tennis is generally an individual sport. And the fact that Great Britain haven't done very well in recent years, to say the very least, has meant that the Davis Cup has very much been looked at as an afterthought. But if they can come through this weekend and they are the favourites, and you can see why they're the favourites, then it would be a magnificent achievement, not just for the players involved, particularly Murray, of course, but also for the sport, because tennis is still seen across the United Kingdom largely as a kind of rich person's sport, and you don't get the facilities across the country that you get in very kind of localised areas of London and such. But the success of the Murray family and the way that they've made such a huge impact just shows that there is something in British tennis that can be successful, and you know, a victory can only underline that.
I hope you're not implying that because Andy Murray's from Scotland that he's obviously not coming from as privileged a background as perhaps most of the tennis supporters that we get, because Paul will be very angry about that, although I'm sure he again is singing Andy Murray's praises down under at the moment. I think as well for British tennis, we've kind of been ticking off the boxes of what's needed to happen. We've brought through Andy Murray where perhaps Henman has failed. He's won a Grand Slam tournament. He won the Olympics in London as well, which is an incredible moment. And now for GB tennis to be able to celebrate this overall, as it's almost the long building process that we've had to finding some real quality in the British sport, especially in the men's game. I know the women's game continues to struggle slightly, and we don't really have somebody that we can look at and say potential world kind of number five or above or anything like that. But with Andy Murray, he has really blazed a trail to put British tennis right back on the map, where it was just kind of lingering, I think, with Henman and Radzetsky. You never really thought they quite had enough to make that step to a Grand Slam. And this would kind of put the icing on the cake, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And a lot of credit has to go to the likes of particularly Leon Smith as well. The impact he's had over the past 5 or 6 years since he came in, you know, some of the nondescript ties really they've had to play to get into this position in the first place. You know, it's been fantastic. The likes of Jamie Ward, the way that he performed last season against the USA and this season, but also, you know, the squad as a whole, the way that Leon Smith has got this team camaraderie up and working together so brilliantly, You know, that's fantastic the way that he's put that together, and he deserves an awful lot of credit.
We hope to see GB being successful. Of course, we're trying to be unbiased, but it's not going to happen on this show this weekend in the Davis Cup final. Chris, a pleasure to have you joining us today. Unfortunately, we couldn't get you on the NBA and NHL stuff as well, but big thanks to Stephen Edwards and, of course, Mr. Chris Vokes for joining us on the show today. We'll be back in 7 days' time, and hopefully we'll have Paul from Down Under as well when we return. Until then, remember to subscribe to us on iTunes, and of course follow us on Twitter @20MinuteHit @20MinuteHit. We'll be back next time out.